today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, I've been thinking a lot about the greatest American band of all time, and I think I have my selection. Would you like to guess?
Oh, sure. This will be fun. Probably the Beach Boys, right?
Nope.
The Grateful Dead?
Nope, that's not it.
I know. Creedence.
Nope, not that either.
Huh. I guess I don't know then. Could you give me a hint?
Sure. It rhymes with Zing Tip Moat.
Okay, Patrick, so we are doing a patron call today,
yes,
remotely again, and this is an exciting one because it's a new patron
to the
show, and we've had trouble connecting with this guy a little bit. We had something scheduled for a few days ago or a couple days ago, and it didn't work out, and what happened, man? I was worried. I thought something happened. I was so worried that I reached out to your friend Andy to be like, is Patrick okay? Because I usually text about 20 times a day.
I know.
What's going on?
Well, and I'll tell you what I've been bad at during this, stay-at-home situation is I've been real bad about keeping my stuff charged. Like, you don't think about it. I leave my laptop upstairs, with the battery running and phone, who knows where it is. You just grab it and, plug it in. But I guess it was Thursday, a couple days ago anyway, one street over from us, they were knocking the house down to do a tear down and rebuild, in Northern Virginia, very common, right? Yeah.
Big thing in your part of Northern Virginia, especially because it's like older neighborhood and now people want to, I guess the model now is to just, instead of reselling the old house, take it down and put up a new modern house, right?
Some folks were knocking it down. They were knocking a whole house down, and apparently the guys who were doing the demolition somehow knocked the transformer down as well, which turned the power off to just these three little streets. That's another thing about these old neighborhoods. They got, they're gridded out to the point where if the power ever goes out in our neighborhood, we're like the last people, because they're like, well, we got to hit the ones where, 100,000 people would be turned on first, and then there's like, 45 people in our neighborhood. So anyway,
right,
out of power all day, and all the devices were dead. I missed the NFL draft, missed talking to our new patron, Jeff. So,
well, we're happy that everything's okay.
Me too.
Maybe people were worried because it was like, where's Patrick? He can't go anywhere. What's happening? I don't know what's happening. So that was funny. You had no way to contact anyone, and what a weird day, huh?
It was bizarre.
So we're going to record today. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us is patron Jeff Niebuhr. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. How are y'all?
We're doing okay today, I guess. Yeah, so yep. I nailed the pronunciation first try, right?
Okay. Yeah, it was perfect. Perfect. It's very impressive.
So Jeff, tell people where you are.
Sure. I'm just outside of Atlanta in Alpharetta, Georgia, which is awesome. And we are coming off lockdown, so I got tattoos and my nails done and haircut this morning, and everything's back to normal. That's not really true. It's still pretty well shut down, but the sun's out, so that's nice.
And Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being a patron of the show. It does mean a lot to us to help keep it going. I appreciate that. And also on the video, I see behind you, it looks like you have a Fender 12-string acoustic guitar back there?
Sure,
that's
beautiful, that's awesome, man.
Do you play... guitar a lot?
A little. I grew up playing bass, but playing bass by yourself for your kids, it's only so much they can take. So you got to.
That's right.
You got to move on.
Yeah. Unless you're John Entwistle, it's hard to entertain anybody with the bass. Yeah.
I assume you've been into music since you were a kid. You're a pretty hardcore
fan.
Sure,
Yep. I grew up in Auburn, Alabama, and for whatever reason, we were kind of my friend group at age, 12, 11, 13, 14, was into rap. We were early on into rap. So this is 82, 83, 84.
Wow.
My first concert was Houdini and the Fat Boys, and I saw Run DMC and Public Enemy, and then transition into college. I went hard into, alternative college rock. I graduated high school 87, so REM and the Smithereens and Hoodoo Gurus and, you know, that whole scene. I started a band. I'm going to shout out to the Chill Bump, still available.
Nice.
On iTunes and Spotify, wherever you get your music. It's awesome. So we played for a while, and then, as in the Blues Brothers, we all took straight jobs.
What do you do for a living these days?
So I work for Hewlett Packard Enterprise. I'm in IT, and we do delivery to the Department of Defense. So I run a team of project managers. So it's great. Yeah, and they're busy. The whole world's shutting down, but the Department of Defense is increasing their needs.
Mm, I'm sure, yeah. Before we get to the topic, one last thing. So what kind of music are you into today?
I still listen to a lot of the stuff that I listened to 30 years ago. It's kind of sad. I do get a lot of new music from you guys. I love that. I love the whole streaming thing where you can just immediately say, oh, I want to hear that song. I do Pandora. I do Spotify. I don't do Apple Music so much, but I think it's great. My kids do more YouTube, right? So we do YouTube playlists and...
Okay, so what was the topic you wanted to talk about today? Because you get to pick the topic.
My belief is that, in general, the United States is kind of about individuals. And I think that flows into the musicians that come out of this country. Where the UK and much of the rest of the world, where our rock music comes from, is a little more collective in nature. And they tend to have more bands, and the US tends to have more individuals. And I think all three of us were in a band, and we all know what that was like. It's a bit like being married to four other guys, and you know, you have to work through so many things. And I think the American spirit sometimes produces more individuals than great bands. And so the topic really is who's the all-time greatest American group? Not the best, not your favorite. But who is the greatest? And I think, that's all these, best of lists are really just a means to an end. And really it's the means that's most important, which is the discussion. So I like to have that discussion. There's lots of people that will give lots of answers. And I like to hear, everybody's thought process there.
So let me just pause you there for a minute. You can take us through your thought process, but
sure.
Patrick, I'm sure we've discussed this before. The notion, I've given a lot of thought to this, the notion that in the UK, you just have like huge bands. There's no real, there's barely a comparable band that came out of the United States in terms of just like sales and impact of, say, the Beatles, the mm-hmm. Stones, the Who, right? If you mm-hmm. just took those three, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you've got, more recently, like an Oasis, I guess, or who would be
Duran
some other...
Duran.
What's that?
Yeah.
Duran. Ruled for a long time.
That's right. I mean, yes, you can go through. Yeah, there was that like sort of second British invasion of the 80s. Time after time after time, you see a lot of great bands, and you don't necessarily see a lot of great, like, individual singers, like you're saying, individual artists so much of the UK, whereas in the US it's like the opposite. It's like you kind of struggle to be like, who's the biggest band to come out of the US? But you can certainly go, well, we produced Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry and
Prince,
Michael Jackson,
Madonna,
and Prince and Madonna. Yeah, and the list goes on and on and on with individuals. Bruce Springsteen, which I think you want to talk about a little bit later, Jeff, is kind of this weird amalgam, but so on and so on and so on. It's like, what is that dynamic there? And I guess what you're saying, Jeff, is it's the idea of the individualism in this country versus collectivism and somewhere else. That could be part of it. I don't know. What thoughts do you have on this, Patrick? This is my longest question ever.
And I think it's important that Jeff outlined, you know, greatest versus favorite versus influential, you know, all that stuff. But most of the bands were formed in the wake of the British invasion, right? You never really had that mindset to be in a group. It really was, I guess, you know, the American dream of one individual could become this, you know, incredibly successful superstar person. And you saw it in a lot of industries, you know, from newspapers to oil to, you know, all kinds of things where you'd have these amazing individuals who want to rise up to the top. I just recently watched this movie, but the movie There Will Be Blood, there's a speech by the main character where he says, you know, I have a competition in me.
I have a competition in me. I want no one else to succeed.
That's part of the American spirit, and I think it's translated into music that way too.
And I think if you look at the history of American music before rock and roll, too, it was an era of band leaders, right?
Yeah, that's very true as well. Yeah, Ellington and the big bands, they always had that guy up there, you know, leading the band with his name. And also, when the singers were spotlighted in those groups, they were individuals, you know.
That's what I was thinking, too. I was thinking about how Frank Sinatra came out of Tommy Dorsey's band, right?
That's right. Yeah,
Tommy Dorsey's the band leader. Frank Sinatra, the featured singer, and then it allowed Frank Sinatra to go off on his own and become his own quote unquote band leader in a way, or his own, yep, you know, artistic force, right?
Totally.
In early rock and roll in America, at least, it came out of that tradition. It just kind of followed that same template to a large extent. That's what the industry knew how to promote, right? Was Elvis Presley's going to be a star singer, right?
That's right.
They weren't trying to create, you know, the Hound Dogs or something like that, right?
No. And it always was Buddy Holly and the Crickets, or Johnny Cash and the Tennessee Two, and, you know, all those kind of things.
So probably wasn't until the British invasion, right, that sort of changed all of that.
I would say.
Jeff, what are your thoughts on American bands then?
Sure. So, I mean, I think you have to say it's got to be pure American. So all members have to be born in the U.S. So that kills Fleetwood Mac. Sorry, Patrick. Kills Talking Heads. Kills the band, who essentially,
it does,
I think, started Americana music. Yep. But sorry, they're all Canadians except for Levon, I guess.
Yep.
For me, also, it has to be a real band. All members have to contribute, have to write. It's not someone and their band, like you mentioned. It's not Bruce Springsteen and his band or whatever. You know, Bon Jovi, those guys were, hired by John Bon Jovi. They didn't get a piece of the action. They were salaried employees, is what I understand, which is weird. But so I don't think a Sly and the Family Stone, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, you know, you might push them on the edge. But I also don't think it's duets. So Simon and Garfunkel, I don't count.
Right.
Everly Brothers, I don't count.
Right.
I think they got to write their own songs. That takes out most of Motown, Supremes, Temptations, Drifters. A lot of country artists, even to this day.
Yep.
So I went to the, I don't know if you guys know Malcolm Gladwell, but he did a great podcast, and he used data from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Rolling Stones most influential artist or whatever. So I went there too. So here are some that they list, right? Beach Boys, Nirvana, Doors, Velvet Underground, Eagles. I won't read them all. It goes on and on. And I guess I'll cut to the chase, right? My opinion is there is a definite answer, and it's a tie. It's a tie between REM and the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
And I would go toe to toe arguing those two against any all comers. So I think that's the intent, is to spark a conversation. And what makes a band great? And I think it's influence. I think it's span. I think in some ways it's the way the band ends, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it is their ability to innovate, to not sound the same. You know, the Ramones sounded the same, I think, on every album. They were a great band. I love the Ramones. But the growth that both the Beastie Boys and REM showed over their long careers is amazing.
And let me ask you this, Jeff. In where do you place album sales or, hits or that kind of thing, criteria-wise, in that formula?
I think that's a piece of it. You know, I think that's maybe why you can't say the Velvet Underground, right?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know that they sold enough. Although I think if you just went on sales, I didn't look this up, but it's probably the Eagles.
Yeah, unfortunately, right. It is. Yeah.
It's an interesting comparison between the Velvet Underground and the Eagles, right? So two sort of opposite ends of the sales spectrum, but also two very different bands in terms of their influence and impact on music, American music. In particular, I think if you look at the Velvet Underground, I think most people today would say probably one of the most influential bands on, you know, American alternative music, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty much understood. That's like sort of like the foundation, you know, of a lot of what that all became. The Eagles, and, you know, if you people want to come at me, fine, I'll deal with this. But the Eagles have had a huge influence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
Unfortunately, their influence has really been sort of the dawn of modern pop country, which, you know, I think a lot of those acts over the last 20 years or so would cite the Eagles as one of their prime influences. And I know the industry, the country music, you know, major label industry out of Nashville has always been sort of, you know, trying to discover a band that kind of like sounds like the Eagles, you know, like that's what works on that kind of radio.
Totally.
And so I actually would say they've had a huge influence. Unfortunately, I would say it's not necessarily the right influence.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway,
that's a great observation, Jim. And I think, you know, at the risk of a bunch of people turning off this episode and unsubscribing from our podcast, I will mention, in the same boat but a different way, the Grateful Dead have been incredibly influential in the terms of the way they've done business, you know, and the way they made money without being successful selling studio albums in the mainstream. Their entire culture, you know, the entire intense fan culture, tape trading, all that. But again, I don't think you could consider them the greatest because of a lot of reasons, you know, and also I think the fact that their music appeals to such a specific audience also, you know, would kind of keep them out of that conversation. But again, influential, man, there are a few more influential American bands than the Dead.
Yeah. About the Dead too is they've been seen by more humans than probably any other humans ever to live, probably ever in person, right? That's a very weird thing. But I think if that was the only criteria, you'd probably give it to them. I think Aerosmith is probably in that category because they definitely innovated and had a long career. I just, you know, I think the way their career ended was kind of sappy ballads. Although I saw them live maybe 10 years ago, and if you had to like explain what a rock and roll guitarist looked like to aliens, you would say, that guy, he's awesome.
Yeah, totally. And they, I think, are an interesting case because, you know, for a long time, they were sort of considered America's answer to the Rolling Stones. Right. You know, they were trying to be that kind of band. So
the band that Patrick and I have talked about recently as a contender for greatest American band, this isn't going to necessarily satisfy your longevity criteria, but we've talked a lot about CCR in that conversation. And I'll give you the pros and cons of that. Pro-wise, I would say, again, probably a bigger impact than people realize. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about things like Americana or even just sort of like roots rock, you know, that became a thing, right? You would look to CCR as sort of a lot of the template of that. And then I also think just in terms of like sales and like hits, if you go back, it's really amazing. If you go back and look at their discography, like how many like hit singles they had, it's like insane. But it was a very compact period of time, right, Patrick? Like four or 5 years or something, and that was it.
Yeah, very. And also, I would say, you know, like Jeff was talking about, could you potentially remove, you know, the guitar player and the bass player and the drummer and still have a band that sound a lot like CCR? Probably, you know, because John Fogerty definitely wrote all the songs. And but you couldn't take Mike Mills or Peter Buck away from REM proven that when their drummer left, they didn't even replace him. He was like irreplaceable. So they continued on as a three-piece. So
you stole exactly what I was going to say, which is if you're going to talk about great bands in the sense of the Beatles and the Stones and the Who, then really you have to have a true band where everybody's contributing. I think you said this, Jeff, right? It's where it isn't just like one guy out front, you know, sort of the singer songwriter, and then other guys, even if they, you know, still operate as a band, right? Mm-hmm. It still may not be a true band in that way. And I think REM is sort of the classic example along the lines of the Beatles, which is that everybody contributed to that band in a way that you can't just extract one piece and have the same band, right?
Weren't there rumors that John Fogerty went back and re-recorded like the whole drum and bass line at night, and then he later denied it or something weird like that?
If you read a couple of books on that, many people claim, especially you know, Stu Cook and some of those guys, that he did go back and do that. You know, he would erase their parts and play it himself until he got it the way he wanted.
And so let me throw out another band from the 60s that had a big influence on bands like REM, which would be the Byrds.
Yes.
Now, you would say the Byrds, again, very influential, but were they a true band? Because, you know, in the early, like, wasn't the first record, like, Roger McGuinn was, like, the only Byrd actually played on the record?
That's right, yeah. Because there were so many good studio musicians in California at the time that's the way they put records together. But, yeah, again, another really influential band. Obviously, very influential on REM, as were the Velvets.
Okay, so let's get to the Beastie Boys one, because I find that really intriguing, because the Beastie Boys came to my mind when this topic came up, but there was something I was like, but is that really a band, like the way people think about as a band? You know, these guys did play instruments. I mean, I think, didn't they play Sabotage live on SNL or something like that?
They started out as a punk band. So.
Yeah, right. That's so they did, but I don't know, maybe it's a rock bias that you think of hip hop groups as something different from a band, in that traditional sense, right? But I like your pick, because, like I said, it was one of the first ones that came to my mind too. I'm like, the Beastie Boys, of course, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they checked most of the boxes. I mean, they were very successful commercially. I don't think you could remove any of the band members and have it sound the same. They were very influential, I think, on, you know, a lot of different people. Their records really hold up today. They had a pretty long career. They've certainly been celebrated widely, you know, by a lot of people. And I think probably it's a really strong argument. I think, you know, like Jeff said, he could probably go toe to toe with you for quite a long time on that one. That'd be hard to argue down. It really would.
And three distinct members.
Yep.
And you got to have all three of them, right? And here's the other thing I would throw into the criteria too, which might eliminate somebody like, say, an Aerosmith. I think the band needs to sound American to be a great American band, right? So like you were saying, Patrick, like Aerosmith was basically kind of aping the Stones, right? And so, I mean, it's funny because it all circles back. The Stones were trying to sound American, and then you have an American band trying to sound like a British invasion band and all that. But I think with like Beasties, REM, and like CCR, like we talked about, I think those are bands that like have an American sound
totally
to them, right?
That's a great point. You know, and I'm interested, Jeff, on your take on the Beach Boys. Like, where do you put them? Because I think a lot of people would say the Beach Boys.
They were only really actively writing for about 9 years.
That's
true. That hurts them a little bit. I think, you know, you hate to say it, does Kokomo automatically get him a veto out of that conversation?
No, he's close,
it's not
man.
Fair, right? I mean,
because that really wasn't the Beach Boys.
So then how long were they really? If you don't count that hit, then you compress it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're great. I think they influenced REM, right?
Oh yeah, totally.
So
I don't know. I think the Beach Boys are top five American band for sure. I mean, they're right there in the conversation, because you look at just take the 60s output. the Brian Wilson Beach Boys, they went from basically being sort of like this, you know, party surfish kind of band that was doing Chuck Berry-ish stuff, but still writing like some pretty great like pop tunes, you know, of their own, right? To then evolving into like one of the most creative and influential bands of all time. Yeah. I mean, it's, and it also checks my box of sounding American, you know, and in a way I think was really important for that time period too. We've talked before about sort of the mysticism of California, you know, in the 60s, and to be able to sort of capture that within a song, I think it was really, it set sort of a tone for America at that time, you know, when I think America needed it too, you know, with a lot of the turmoil and stuff like that was going on, you know, I think there's a lot to be said, for the Beach Boys. They're probably top three American band, I would say.
There, interesting. Yeah. What about the Doors? This is fun, by the way. This is really fun. I'm just going to keep naming bands and let's kick them out.
Sure.
I don't know about the Doors.
I think I saw a Doors tribute band at the Whiskey A Go Go. It was just awesome. And it was like, I was talking to my friend, like, I think it was like watching the Doors for real, because it was like 40% unbelievable awesome and 60% annoying.
Yeah.
I want to leave. It's just terrible.
There is that element to the Doors. I mean, you know, I think that's why I like the Doors' Greatest Hits was such a top-selling album. That was the only one I had for the longest time, because all the songs are there. And it's not like you're getting all that much other stuff, you know, when you get the original studio albums.
What about Nirvana?
Well, that's a good question. But I think, I mean, if they had a couple more albums.
Yeah.
You know? That's
what if you combine Nirvana and the Foo Fighters and you said that was one entity? Then I think they probably rise a little bit.
Yeah, they would definitely be a lot higher if that was the case. Yeah, absolutely right. And influential, man, you can't. I mean, it's one of those situations where you want. I think we talked about it on this podcast before. Like, you always think about what if with people that left us too soon.
To me, what makes it hard to evaluate Nirvana too is I actually think Cobain's best music was probably yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, as great as like as important as Nevermind was in terms of just completely shifting the American musical landscape, I'll give it all the credit in the world for that. It was like a tornado that just came through, and just changed, you know, the landscape. Right, so. I give all the credit there, but I actually think you could already see him growing as an artist with In Utero in really interesting ways. And you were sort of like excited for like, where's this guy going to go? And it makes it, I think, kind of hard to evaluate them. So I don't know. The Foo Fighters, I like a lot of their stuff and I have some of their records, and they're definitely, it's like music that you need sometimes to just kind of like steady your mood or whatever. But I don't know. Don't come at me too hard on this, peoples, but they're kind of like you were describing the Beach Boys a little bit in their later period where they became kind of a tribute to themselves.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I think of the Foo Fighters now. Like, they're just sort of like playing these songs that they kind of know everybody just likes and feels good. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I certainly don't feel like they're like growing as a band, you know?
And you know what's really interesting about that, Jeff, when you said that, it made me think of Parliament Funkadelic. Like, those, you know, really two different bands, but they kind of morphed, you know, kind of evolved into and sort of branched out, you know, without really leaving the family tree. But, you know, there's interesting things about them, too, is how many records did they really sell? And, you know, that's a really interesting one to me to think about, is Parliament Funkadelic, when you go back and trace their history.
Yeah. One of my first singles I ever bought was Atomic Dog, and that was just George Clinton.
There you go.
That's a great foundational 45. I think I bought that and Abracadabra on the same day. So,
I mean, I think there's other bands too, like Big Star, obviously super influential, never sold any records.
No.
The Residents. Sort of, you know, intentionally obscure, so you got to, you know, can count them out, even though they've had a long career and been really unique and inventive. Devo, I don't know about Devo. Again, they were inventive, but, you know, kind of obscure, and I don't know really how long their run,
yeah,
you know, completely went on.
Then you've got all the SST bands.
Yes, that's true.
Right? Mm-hmm. Again, not much in terms of record sales, but
right.
I think a lot there in terms of influence. Certainly Black Flag.
Black Flag,
The Minutemen, and then Husker Du.
Right.
And we didn't even talk about the Replacements, which, no. You know, definitely a lot of fans of this show are probably going to, you know, vote for that one. And then Sonic Youth.
Yep, that's true.
In terms of, certainly in terms of longevity and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're getting into stuff that to the mainstream, you know, barely even registers, right? So I don't know that you can count any of the. I don't know that if you were taking an objective view, you would say any of those would be necessarily in the conversation for greatest American band.
Right. And maybe they may be in the category of favorites.
Yes, that's a good definition.
Maybe a little different.
Mm-hmm. And then you go back to things like the New York Dolls, again, very influential, but didn't last very long or sell a lot of records. You know, the Fugs, bands like that. Lynyrd Skynyrd, like, what would happen to them if there wasn't the plane crash? Like, that was a band in the ascendancy that was very, very influential.
Yeah, but that's
again,
a good one.
Yeah, but again, you know, cut short. Allman Brothers, you know, maybe same thing.
And then I'm curious, too, when you mentioned the Beastie Boys, so where would you put Run DMC in that mix? Because they were contemporaries of them, and actually Run DMC, had the first rap gold album or platinum album or something like that.
I think Beastie Boys was the first platinum.
Is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah.
I know Run DMC had some milestone in terms of sales. But
I've seen Run DMC more than I've seen the Beastie Boys or R.E.M. But I don't think they lasted as long, right? They had two pretty awesome records, one okay record, and then struggled a little bit to migrate a change. I mean, I think part of the reason that the Beastie Boys continued on is they were not stuck in a formula. You guys just had an episode on not too long ago on second albums taking a left turn.
Yep.
Right. And man, did that open up a whole new fertile ground for them. But yet they never like left their roots. Like I think of the Bee Gees. Like if you listen to early Bee Gees, it's like a folk band, and then all of a sudden they've been a disco kind of, or I don't know. But the Beastie Boys, they still sound like hip hop dudes from Upper East Side. Sounded the coolest guys in the room, making records all the way into their, you know, late ages. It's amazing.
Yeah, and continuing to innovate and not ever be afraid to, like, take chances musically on their records. Yeah. You know, they, like you said, that times they essentially operated like a live band, and at times they operated like a studio band, yet all those records sold a lot. And they were always out there touring behind it, too. It wasn't like, you know, they were, you know, just had become the late period Beatles where they were just a studio band. So they were out there playing live a lot. And also there's an interesting political element to their approach as well. So it wasn't like, you know, they were shying away from any, you know, statement about that kind of stuff. That's really interesting too. They wore their beliefs on their sleeves, and they were funny. You know, the Beastie Boys are like one of the funnier bands of all time, you know, and you listen to some of those songs and they still just crack you up. I guess, you know, humor is probably not a big qualifier because then you, well, what about Zappa? I mean, you know, obviously the Mothers of Invention were kind of a band, but again, that's kind of Zappa leading it, you know, more than anything else. Same with Captain Beefheart.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And that's where you get into the sort of American tradition as we were discussing of like the band leader thing. And I always, we referenced Bruce Springsteen. I always found his appeal to be really interesting because he was somehow able to have it both ways.
Yeah.
Be a solo artist and be part of a band that people really loved. Like when you go live to see a Springsteen show, you want to have the E Street Band. It's not the same.
Right.
If he's just doing a solo show or for that period of time where he had some other band, right? People were like, no, that's not what I want to see. That's not what I'm paying for. Like they know every member of the E Street Band. They love the E Street Band. They feel like it's some kind of family. It's some kind of unit. It's something that you know, just plays together like no one else can. So they do think of this act as a band in some way, mm-hmm. but it's not really. I mean, it's a guy who, you know, is the songwriter and calls all the shots.
Yeah.
And these guys really are, you know, to put it bluntly, they're hired hands, but yet they're able to somehow sell the idea that they're a true band in some way also. So he's really been able to ride sort of both, or be able to straddle that ground, you know, and have a foot in both camps. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like the Buckaroos making an album without Buck Owens. You know, it really, they could do it, but it wouldn't quite be the same.
Right, right.
I got one for you guys. Now, I want to hear where you put this band, you know, based on all the criteria we've already talked about. What about ZZ Top?
Again, I think they work for being American, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, that whole, like, blues rock thing is, and that, you know, sort of Texas influence and everything. You could, like, almost feel, like, the dust on your clothes when you listen to their some of their great records, some of their old stuff, for sure.
Yeah.
They did, you know, they've had pretty strong record sales.
Longevity. Yeah.
They've been popular. They've changed. I don't know if it's always for the better. That might be my only issue there. The only thing I guess I could say is, like, they're just not top of mind. I mean, look how long it took us to get to that one.
That's,
you know,
true.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you just, most people just, they have their fans.
Do
for
they
sure,
influence the culture,
them.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I with both REM and the Beastie Boys, I could almost argue they ushered in an entire new category of music where they were on the forefront.
Yeah.
Of, you know, for REM, college and alternative. I mean, those terms we throw around today, but those terms didn't really exist in 82, 83 when they were starting.
Right.
And while rap existed, it was pretty, you know, pretty local to a certain population, and not a lot of white kids in the suburbs were pouring money into the rap industry that is now, I think, the highest grossing section of the music. You know, maybe that would have happened with or without the Beastie Boys, but they were certainly at the beginning of that wave. And I don't think you could say that for ZZ Top, that they ushered in. They had a look and a feel with the keychain and the weird car, but I don't think we all went out and got the ZZ Top keychain. Right. Maybe, you know, I don't know.
That's true. Yeah.
I think you're right.
That's a good point. That's a very good point, Jeff. And, you know, most people's first blues album was probably not a ZZ Top album, you know, or blues rock album. Somebody else kind of got there first. Whereas, as you said, maybe Licensed to Ill was the first time a lot of people had anything sort of rap related or without a guitar lead on it.
And I would love for us to talk more in depth on ZZ Top sometime, because I do find them to be a pretty fascinating band.
Very interesting.
My one criticism was of them would be, even though it sold them a lot of records, I do think they leaned a little too hard into the image thing and it forced a lot of people to take them less seriously. I think they became a bit too cartoonish, right?
Yeah, they really kind of did.
All right, well, this has been great. Any last thoughts here?
So yeah, ultimately I want to write a biopic that interweaves the Beastie Boys and the REM, because they have two touch points I'm going to talk about real quick. One is Everybody Hurts won Video of the Year, and MCA dressed up as his alter ego bum rushed the stage and said Sabotage should have won. That's an awesome video. And Michael Stipe is like, what's going on? But that's like 10 years before Kanye did it. And then years later at the Tibetan Freedom Concert, they had to cancel one night. And it was Michael Stipe and MCA that walked out on stage together to tell the crowd. That's how the movie would end. It would be awesome.
Love it, man.
The greatest American band.
Can you get a treatment to us by the end of May, Jeff? Would that be possible?
Sure. That's right. Well, I'm shopping around.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Not like we have any money to make it. We just want to steal your ideas.
Smart.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, we're going to get some correspondence on this one. Let's open this up for discussion.
Yes.
What we would prefer is for people to call, because we'd love to hear you actually, you know, advocate for who you think is the greatest American band. So call 612-440-1984. Thank you. And leave a message there. If you do that, you'll go right to the, you know, the front of the line.
That's right. Yes.
After that, if you want to email, you can rock@suburbspod.com, or you can put a comment on our Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, all of those at Suburbs Pod. You can do those things too. Jeff, we so appreciate your support.
This
and if anyone else would like to be like Jeff, you go to patreon.com/suburbspod and you get all the info there. All right. We'll keep this conversation going. And we'll talk to you again in about 3 months, Jeff.
Perfect. Thank
all right.
You guys.
Hopefully by then things will be better. And also, but here's the other thing too. In 3 months, I may have a pretty good ZZ Top beard going by then, right?
That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You get you some sunglasses.
Yeah. There we go. All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Jeff Neighbor.
Thanks, Jeff. And we'll talk to everyone later.
Someone's going to say, what about X?